This is Marcus Whitney's Audio Universe.
Like, you gotta do the work. You gotta show up and just do the work.
Happy Friday, good people. What's up? Marcus Whitney live. And wow, how excited am I for today's episode? So for the past couple of years, I've been getting these emails inviting me to apply to be a part of something called the Nexus Summit. And I've been nominated by this person, by that person. And I was starting Jumpstart. I was super busy. So for a while, I did not respond. But then I got nominated by my friend who's been a guest on this show, Marquis Stillwell. And I was like, okay, I have to take that one seriously. And so things just lined up with my calendar. I wasn't doing the Health Further Summit. And so I was like, okay, I'm gonna apply. And I got in and I attended this summit last year. And it really did change my life in many, many incredible ways. And it continues to change my life. It is an unbelievable community of people from around the world, which are committed to trying to use their time, treasure, and talent to make the world a better place. And so I'm so grateful to be able to have and thank on the show today the co-founder and CEO of Nexus and the Nexus Global Summit, Rachel Garrell. Rachel, what's up, my friend?
Hi, thank you so much for having me. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Happy Friday. I'm so glad we were able to make this happen. So thanks to you. Thanks to your team for helping to take some time out of your busy schedule to start this. We have a couple of topics I want to hit on, but let's definitely start with the origin story of Nexus. How did you and your conspirators, you know, come up with this idea that has just been so incredibly infectious to the people that have become part of this community?
Thank you for asking. Few people know these stories because we're a decade in and 6,000 members all over the world. People don't really know that we started out just as an idea. So the idea was that 2011 was the International Year of Youth. And every year the UN announces it's the International Year of something. There was an International Year of Oceans, an International Year of the Potato. This is a true story. But this 2011 was the International Year of Youth. And how that works is that any group of people or nonprofits can propose to the UN an event that's aligned with the International Year of blank. And so we proposed that we would like to host an event for the next generation of the world's most influential families. And the purpose was to unite philanthropists, impact investors, people with unique influence, and real proven social entrepreneurs in one room to represent their countries at the UN to figure out how can we collaborate to hurry history and scale solutions from Africa to the Middle East to Latin America, Asia, and beyond. And so walked into the UN, handed in a piece of paper, said, we want to do this. 5 seconds later, they said, sure, you can have a room. And the date is in 6 weeks. And so we didn't have a name for it. We didn't have an idea of who we were going to invite. And so we quickly reached out to 75 low-hanging fruit, 75 people that we knew well who'd be interested in figuring out what could this be. They all showed up 6 weeks later at the UN. It was amazing. And we were proud of ourselves, patted ourselves on the back and said, great job. We got you 75 amazing international young leaders. Like, now let's unite and be the dream team that changes the world. And everyone said, yeah, but there's not enough people from Australia. There's not enough people from Africa. There's not enough people. And there's only 75 of us. And we said, okay, well, you were everyone we knew. And so they said, well, if we each invite 5 people, can you get another date in a bigger room? So we went back to the UN and said, we need another date in a bigger room. And they gave us a date 5 months later for the big room at the UN, a huge, beautiful, majestic 350-person room. And the Secretary General showed up as well.
Wow.
And those 75 people became Nexus. So they each worked their networks, thought, who do they know who has the most access and influence and spirit to make the world a better place and really desire to put time into that as opposed to just talk? Mm-hmm. And so those 75 each invited 5. We also cold called the Forbes 500 list and said, we're calling to host an event at the UN. Would you like to send one member of your family who's a next gen? And July 2011, we had a 350-person summit with people from 50 countries and the Secretary General. And And that was really the official Nexus Summit with the title. Wow. And there you go.
Wow. And so I just have to ask the small question, which is, before this, you were doing something else, and then this thing sounds like it just takes over your life. Like, did you,
correct,
you know, it doesn't sound like when you went into the UN to go claim this year of, you know, opportunity, you knew, okay, I'm going to sign up to be the CEO of an organization that's going to have 6,000 people from around the world 10 years later. So what was that whirlwind of, like, life change for you personally, you know, as this thing became very, very real very quickly?
It was unbelievable, but I believe completely in trusting the universe. And I believe in listening more than talking. I have two ears and one mouth. And I believe of being of service. And so when moments present themselves, big or small, you ask yourself, am I able to be of service in this moment? Am I the right person to be of service? And I think if I had had a five-year plan, Nexus never would have happened. Mm. I would have said we can rationally scale into three countries within 5 years, and we'll need to spend, you know, this much time developing relationships with the prime ministers and heads of state. But instead, it became a by us, for us movement. And it really grew as a movement. And so the first event we did in February of 2011 was 3 days before my wedding. I then flew to Costa Rica, and everyone's like, what was this thing you did at the UN? And I was like, I think we're going to do another one. But then that summer was all hands on deck, quit everything else you're doing, forego salaries, forego work-life balance. Like, people from 50 countries want to change the world, and they're saying there's no other vehicle doing it, and they want to create it. So I believe I was like chief admin, you know. Wow. I was there to write down and document what our next gen members were going to architect. Mm-hmm. And so when they said, we're going to go to number 10 Downing Street next, and we're going to go to the First Lady of Australia next, I said, I'm in. I'll give you materials. Here's what we used at the UN. And suddenly I was flying all over the world, meeting with heads of state, bringing Nexus summits with, you know, to the Sydney Opera House and to with the Prime Minister of Lebanon. And it was just unbelievable. But it's because the momentum of the movement of the people and everybody feeling like this was theirs to co-create and not mine.
Quickly.
And I didn't, it wasn't a top-down agenda.
Quickly, can you just run down all the places in the world where Nexus Summits exist? Obviously not 2020, but, like, generally speaking, what was on the dance card for this year?
Yeah, so this year we were doing a summit in Latin America, Middle East, a separate one in Israel, Caribbean, Australia, New Zealand, India, Africa, the US, and Europe. And then our global summit at the United Nations. And they usually take place with the head of state in the country. To really bring the youth voice to come and inform what we believe the future of that country in the world should be focused on.
Incredible. So that was 11. I was counting. So that was 11 events. There's one of you. Can you talk a little bit about, I heard you. I mean, obviously, this thing started at the United Nations, working with, you know, the Secretary General, and then has moved into these other countries and continents and engaging the heads of state there. But still, you know, you need really strong leadership in each one of these places. You can't establish 11 great events a year, like just you and your team. So can you talk about that, how the leadership has grown around the world and how, you know, the community has created a model for people to have ownership, but also still stay within the principles of the base of what Nexus is?
Sure. Yeah, we would never exist today if it wasn't for our regional directors or our city ambassadors or working group leaders. Everyone is a volunteer and everyone is the most inspiring person I've ever met. Like, if you get to choose who represents your organization that you founded, find people that you want to learn from and people that are really, really smart and driven. And so our principles are very simple. We believe in a just and sustainable world for all, and we're committed to collaborating to hurry history and make solutions scale. We're not transactional, we're relational. So we start every summit by saying very simply, at Nexus, there's no affiliations on your name tags. We don't care where you work, we don't care what you do, because you probably do 100 things. So here, start by saying, what is your passion and how can I help? And if you don't have a passion yet, then focus on how you can help, and everybody can always help. You have no idea what it is. And that's the spirit that we bring all around the world to every single continent as they host their summits. And there's regional directors and steering committees in each continent that find like-minded people who really want to bring that same spirit of helpfulness and collaboration to fruition in their region. And it's been beautiful because I learn what works in one region, I'll then steal and say, oh my God, that's amazing, Australia. You have a policy of no panels without women. We're going to make that a global policy. And, you know, we have another region who said there's a policy of no panels without representation of different faces and different colors and different races. Done. We're going to make that a global policy. So I really think that we are co-creating. I'm learning from the regional directors so, so much more than they're probably learning from our blueprint. Our blueprint is very light. You have to have the ability not to solicit anybody, and you have to really want to do work to make change and not just talk about it. But based on that, people riff in amazing ways, and we're so inspired.
I want to spend a little bit of time talking about the intentionality of the policy, because while you described it as light, I would say it is. It may be light in terms of maybe it's light reading, but it carries significant meaning. Right. Many people go to conferences, and I know that is not what Nexus gatherings are, having been to one. Right. But when people think about, I'm going to spend money and I'm going to get on a plane and go to a hotel and go spend 3 or 4 days with a bunch of people, the conference mindset is what kicks in. Right. And part of the rationale for the investment is I'm going to sell often. Right. And so as I remember it, the fundamental thing, and this was easy for me because I wasn't going to raise money for anything, but one of the clearest things that's on the website, and you get it in the email when you confirm that you're going to be there, and one of the first things you said, you know, at the orientation is there's no soliciting. And like, if we find out you're soliciting, you're out of here. Like, and that's it. That's the end of it, right? Can you talk about the intentionality around that and the other policies that you've adopted and adapted as you've grown the leadership around the world, that intentionality that went into, and I'm going to talk about the experience I had, but that went into this really, really remarkable experience that you all created your gatherings.
Sure. I mean, you're right. I described it as light, our non-solicitation policy, but that doesn't mean we don't have to remind people every day because we live in a transactional world and people think it's a me first mentality, everybody. And there's a scarcity mindset. And if you don't ask when you have the amazing wealth holder famous last name in front of you, then whenever are you going to get a shot? But in order to create a safe space community where people really feel at home and like it's their family and like the summer camp reunion and that they share a bond with people, we needed to remove the prospect that you could get hit up for something, anything. From that dynamic and make it a dynamic that's completely relational. Who are you? What's your story? Like, what do you care about? What brought you here? And so in order to do that, we do say, and you do have to sign multiple times, that it's a community of non-solicitation. And that's really to protect the integrity of the community. So the community is made up of 2/3 ultra high net worth people and 1/3 amazing, exceptional social entrepreneurs. Now you would imagine that social entrepreneurs would run up to the wealth holders and say, here's my deck, I'm raising around, da da da. But they don't. And the reason is because we do want people to collaborate. That's why we're bringing them together. It's very clearly a collaborative ecosystem. However, the onus is on the people of means to ask questions. What is your passion and how can I help? To entrepreneurs, and they will then find an entrepreneur they're excited about. And they'll ask more questions. Well, have you looked about moving your programs abroad? Have you talked about working with, you know, girls and not just young men? Have you thought about a tech opportunity for that platform? And suddenly collaborations happen, real conversations happen, and the person of wealth ends up saying, you know, I'd love to learn more. Could you send me materials or your financials, or I'm happy to review a deck for you? And eventually, collaboration does happen. Funding does happen. People join people's boards. People get married. People do a lot of things together. But it's without pressure. And it's always on the terms of the person who has the wealth. Mm. And that's really what's so important and why people come back and feel comfortable, because they could have a Her Royal Highness or a Rockefeller or whatever's on their name tag, but they don't have to scratch it out or only hang out in the VIP room, because everybody's there to have a story and everybody's story is equally valuable.
I just have to say that the no title or company on the name tag thing is huge. It's massive, right? Because I think people are just not used to that. They're used to, you know, oh, you work for that company, you work for this company. They're not used to having to lead with their name and their story. And it worked. The reality is it worked. And I think the people who have been to the events will pretty universally say the network is great, but man, leaving with the inspiration that you pick up to like go back out into your world. And yeah, you do. You have this network. You can follow on with people, which is really great. But the inspiration that you get from the people you meet, the stories you hear, and the challenges that people are trying to overcome, and also just the challenges that we as a world face. I mean, I got educated big time on the climate crisis at the global event, and it was actually really transformative for me. You know, based on that event, I went plant-based. I mean, I've been plant-based for a year because of the Nexus Global Summit. So
yeah, we have vegan summits. It's good food.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't even really think to tell you that, but yeah, I changed the way I eat because of that event.
Amazing.
You know, so it is really, really transformative. Let's talk a little bit about impact investing, because impact investing, social impact investing, ESG, a bunch of terms that quite frankly, like I had heard, did not really understand very well. And really rely on Nexus to grow my understanding of the theme. And the reason why I want to talk about it is because you all have been championing it this entire time. And it's now really getting momentum because it's been happening long enough that the results are starting to pour in and people are realizing it's not just the right thing to do. It actually does generate real results. I was talking to a wealth manager from Merrill Lynch about 3 weeks ago. And she was saying that she's screaming at all of her clients that they have to do it. And what she cited was that when you look at the Fortune 100, and particularly you look at like the top companies on the stock market, 25 years ago, when you look at what sort of made up their market cap and what made up the core asset, it was tangible things. It was energy or land or poles that they had all around the country, satellites in the sky. And that today, when you look at the most valuable companies, the value is intangible. And that means like if you don't have the social piece and the sustainability piece, that value can be wiped out in a second. It's an intangible value. That's where we sort of moved. And I thought that was a really great way to frame up exactly why ESG is so important and why impact investing has become not just in vogue, but like where you need to put your money. Can you talk about like when did you learn about impact investing and what has the journey been like at the helm of Nexus over the course of these last 10 years, watching impact investing really grow?
Sure, and I love those analogies and the quotes. So we learned about impact investing in May of 2012 from Sir Ronald Cohen at number 10 Downing Street at our Nexus Europe Summit. We actually had an event with him yesterday, and he's got a new book out, so plug to Sir Ronald Cohen.
Awesome.
He was the father of social finance and of the social impact bond, which was the easiest way to conservatively get involved in impact because it's a bond. So the idea was to reduce recidivism in the criminal justice system, and you buy a bond, and if that bond invests in programs that help keep people from going back to prison once they've been released, and if they work and the programs succeed, you get a higher dividend because the municipality isn't paying for that person to be incarcerated, which is more expensive than the programs.
Okay.
So it was a no-brainer. That was the first time we learned of it. Back in 2012 and 2013, 2014, people would say impact investors were brave, but they actually meant they were stupid. They thought they're really doing philanthropy and they're hoping to get something, but right. They're putting money out there that's not from their foundation. I'm going to call them brave, but they really meant, you know, really, really risky. Now people would say impact investors are just smart. It's just plain smart business. Mm-hmm. And that's been an amazing arc from it being brave to it being smart. It's almost the default position now. That you have to be aligning your money with your values because corporates have to be aligned with some social value. Or like you said, when you have the choice to pick two jackets from two separate companies, and one of the companies invests in protecting our forests and the other doesn't at the same price, or even if it's more money, people will buy the one that has a social difference. What's really interesting to me is that about 70% of the young people who applied for our summits in 2011 self-identified as philanthropist or inheritor. Those same people in our database now when they apply, and you have to apply every single summit, you're not in, you know, you're a member for life, but that doesn't mean you can just rock up at every summit, because we need to have a balance in gender and in race and in diversity and geography. So when people reapply, 70% of those same people now self-identify as impact investors. And you can only self-identify as one thing. Mm. So their identity has moved from an inheritor or philanthropist to an impact investor. And I don't know if that's aspirational or if it's actual, but I know that it means people see impact investor as a term that feels empowered and active and engaged, and philanthropist as something that may seem more passive and more patient. And we want to be restless. There are problems like climate and racial inequities. Like, there are so many problems we need to be restless about, and we need to move towards action. And impact investing can get us there faster than patient philanthropic capital. And people are saying, yes, and let's do both. But the next generation is really saying more and more, let's use the full 100% of our assets towards doing good. My favorite impact investing quote is from Abigail Noble, a former CEO of The Impact. And she said, impact investing is like high school sex. Everyone's talking about it. Very few people are doing it. And those who are doing it probably aren't doing it very well. So I think that's about 5 years old. And I think now people who are doing it very well. But she really captured where we were 5 years ago versus where we are now. Now, I'm not advocating for more people in high school to be having better sex, but it's a whole different podcast.
Yeah. I love that. That was great. I think you just brought up something that, I don't know, it could be controversial, or it could just be, you know, a pretty straightforward thing to talk about. But I think that impact investing, largely prior to 2020, was really, really focused on the environment. You know, the Sustainable Development Goals, the UN, you know, that was sort of like the anchor for people to look at and say, okay, these are the things we're all, as a world, we need to sort of resolve. I recently looked at those, and while it could have been embedded in them, racism is not like, ending racism is not one of the sustainability goals. And
there are 17.
Yes, and there are 17. And there are 17, and I think that was such an interesting thing to read, all 17, and to see ending racism not be one of them. And I think that this year, the definition of social impact investing has certainly expanded to include equity, you know, racial equity, and other things that have been symptoms. You know, we talk about recidivism, and we talk about lots of things. We realize that environmental issues have aspects of racism embedded in them, right? What have you seen over the course of this year around this topic? I was fortunate enough to be able to have one of the more than 200 sessions, and I want to talk about that that you held this year in lieu of actually gathering in person. But what have you seen as Nexus has continued this conversation this year in terms of the intersection of racism and impact investing?
I think there's huge opportunities. I think there always were. And looking backwards, it's disappointing that ESG didn't stand for equity, sustainability, and gender, which it could have all along. Right? That we could have been using capital towards those things for the last 10 years, if not longer. But I'm glad that the country and the world is now thinking about how can they use all of their asset classes to make a difference for equity and to fight racial discrimination in a really systemic way. I think that the easiest and safest place people are looking at doing that is through muni bonds and thinking about how can they help right there in their neighborhoods where they're living. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of funds coming up, so many funds that are really thinking about how to invest in different ways of looking at policing, at different ways of looking at incarceration, and also at supporting a new class of entrepreneurs that's coming up through the ranks that has been historically cut out of a lot of the Y Combinators and the other types of accelerators that exist, because everyone had to work 2 years at Google and go to Stanford or, you know, and there's a very small club. And I think that the new funds that are coming up that are supporting Black and Brown entrepreneurs and founders are just breaking, like they're not just breaking the walls on those clubs. They're trying to, you know, make sure that there are no clubs anymore, that there just isn't one pipeline anymore. That it's not like there's two pipelines. There's just no pipelines, right? Like that everybody stands on their own merits. And I think that that's the world we want to get to. So I've been really inspired by members and by young people and by financial institutions that are finally deciding that this is ready to take center stage. At the same point, disappointed by how many people have needed to die, how many years of injustice have needed to happen for this to feel worthy of being taken on by some larger financial institutions. So everybody, you know, wants to pat people on the back with their new announcements and their press releases. And I'm very happy that they're getting good press for doing good things. However, that's like when people tell me, Rachel, I'm so glad that you don't have all, you know, all white panels that are all male panels. And I was like, but really, should I be getting congratulated for that? Or is that just like basic human math and like what we should have been doing all along? Yeah. So I'm impressed. I'm inspired. I'm glad. But at the same time, I think that let's hurry up and do more because we're certainly late to the party.
Okay, final note, and probably a little bit lighter, but maybe not. Your organization was set to do 11 events this year, and you know, that wasn't possible, right? And one of the you are leading the organization that was, to me, the very first to come to terms with that, and to lean in on the offense and say, well, what do we have and how do we serve our community? And to me, that was such a huge differentiator between you and so many other organizations throwing events, where when the event component fell apart and they were thinking about the economics of that, their quote unquote communities that they say that they serve, they weren't there to be able to serve them. And, you know, because of the work that you all did, that's why this is happening. That's why my live show is happening, because I was so inspired by you not just saying, hey, we're going to do a one-time thing. You were like, no, here's our schedule for this week. And here's 10 things that you can opt in to be a part of a conversation while we're all figuring this thing out together. You know, can you just talk about that first week, you know, when, because it, to me, it feels like you must have had to compress so many decisions and feelings, so many emotions. You had to go through some grieving, but you all came out of the gate with an unbelievable slate of great events. And I remember passing it to multiple people and being like, this is the future. You know, not to say we're not going to get together in person, but this is the future. The response to it, but also just like the quality of it. Can you just talk about what it was like to take your events online, on Zoom, utilizing what we had, and continue to serve your community?
Thank you. Yeah, all credit to David Dietz, our director of impact. He stayed up late at night the first Thursday of COVID and said, we need to show up for the community now more than ever. And Lana Fern, our director of community, just said, yes, we do. And then Ebony, who leads our global events, said, this is what events look like. So, you know, starting mid-March, we went to 19 events a week across four time zones, 10 a.m., 1 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 9 p.m., trying to get Australia, Africa, Asia, India, Latin America, everybody having a place to connect and learn. But what we really did was said to the community, we're here for you. We're leaning in. Tell us what you need. We will find a way to make those voices heard. We will bring you knowledge. We will bring you inspiration. Tell us what you want, but also go find what you want. And so I really can't take a lot of credit for the fact that we did 200 plus events in such a rapid fire way. Our members reached out to the people who inspired them, to authors, to actors, to billionaires, to CEOs, and they reached out if they had their own contacts and said, hey, this is a community that could need your message now, that could learn from you now. And suddenly I'm on emails with Andrew Yang and the CEO of PayPal and Paul Pullman from Unilever and Jeff Skoll and Jean Case and the Prime Minister in Haiti. And I'm going, where do these people come from? And they came from our members saying, I think our community could learn from these people now. These people today. And suddenly there you go. And I think that's the difference, is that Nexus is by members for members. It is a community that is self-curated, and that is the difference. I didn't, if you would have asked me what 10 topics I thought we could have focused on in COVID, I would have gotten it all wrong, but our members got it all right. And that's the trust I place in people to know their community, to know what's missing from the discourse, to know what would be adding value. We had so many people who shared from Indigenous populations. We had people share about so many different topics that are just not on the news. And it was just beautiful. And, you know, that's when you create great content and when people feel ownership themselves of what the content is, they put you on the phone with Valerie Jarrett. Like they make it happen. And I think that's the way that the world should be.
It was inspiring. And so are you, Rachel. I just want to say directly, because I'm not sure the next time that we'll talk, but you are an incredible model for leaders. Incredible. Even in this conversation, constantly, appropriately, giving credit to your team, to the members of the community. You are a very consistent, strong model for leaders. So thank you for being that inspiration for us right now. We need this. We need leaders to show us how to all be leaders, because we need more leaders right now. So among all the things you do, that's the thing you do every single day. You show up and you do the work of being a leader. And I want to thank you for that.
Thank you. Well, I'm a long time fan of servant leadership. I think there's no such thing as better than, there's only equal to. And I want to make sure that everyone feels that they can access, you know, me, and that I'm here to learn from them just as much as they're here to learn from us. And if we go into life with that spirit, if we go into a dinner party or a Zoom chat with that spirit, we're going to invite more learning and invite us all to kind of elevate our consciousness. And that's what we want. So thank you for your compliments right back at you. Thank you for being a mentor to our accelerator this summer, and really just all you give to every community you're a part of. You don't allow yourself to be a footnote, and no one ever should.
Thank you. Everybody out there, I put it on the screen. Follow Rachel, but really, when you follow Rachel, you got to go follow Nexus. So nexusglobal.org is the organization. You can see them on Twitter at the Nexus Summit, on Instagram at the Nexus Summit. You know, just an absolute beacon all the time, but certainly in a moment such as this. So I'm so grateful to have been exposed to this organization, so you really should check them out. My book, Create and Orchestrate, in stores right now. You heard me talk about it all the time. So if you haven't already grabbed a copy, go do it. The podcast, Marcus Whitney's Audio Universe, everywhere that you subscribe to podcasts. You can follow me online at Marcus Whitney. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend and that it's been a good week. And, you know, get some rest, take care of yourself, and I will see you all next week. Until then, let's build a new normal, y'all. Peace.
Thank you for tuning in to Marcus Whitney's Audio Universe.